Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Some Broncos news that we need to pass along.
Can we be there?
Oh, you talk about depleted at a premier position. Jeremiah Tatu is out. Quad injury.
Has he been injured and he's just not able to go? Is that?
I don't know.
Was he not practicing or? I mean, they weren't really practicing anyway. He's probably been, you know, when you look at him and Bradley Chubb, I would give an edge to Tatu. Neither one of them have done much at all. So, but Tatu last year was a good player for the Broncos. And after losing Vaughn, Chubb, slow start, you're losing a starter. That's what you're doing. You're losing another starter. When it rains, it pours.
Yep. When it rains, it pours. Jeremiah Tatu, quad injury, out. The Broncos are actually planning to work out. This is from 12 minutes ago from Mike Kliss. You know who the Broncos are going to work out? Sylvester Williams. Sylvester Williams and Darius Kilgo, who have both been members of the Denver Broncos, man. How crazy is this?
Wow. I think both of those guys are like defensive ends, though. Atachu's an outside linebacker.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not the same position, but obviously, who did we lose our defensive ends? DeMarcus Walker is on IR.
Yep, he's on IR.
Jarrell Casey. So that's why they're working out defensive ends. But good. Hopefully they sign one of them and one of those guys are ready to go. And hopefully Tatu's quad injury isn't a major injury. Certainly not good news.
There are now seven players on the Broncos active 53-man roster that started the year on practice squad. Going into week four. Guys like Devontae Bosby, PJ Locke, Brett Rippon, Derek Tuska, Bellamy, the running back, Levante Bellamy. And Cliff says two more, maybe game day call-ups.
Not good. Look, it's just not good. But the Jets aren't going to feel sorry for the Broncos. The Jets have just as many injuries as the Broncos do. Just as many injuries. So it is what it is. And unfortunately for the Broncos, it just seems like every day brings more injury news, doesn't it? I mean, you know, was it yesterday or the day before? When was the news come out about Elijah Wilkinson?
That was yesterday.
Yeah, just out of the blue.
Monday it was Jarrell Casey.
Yes.
Tuesday it's Elijah Wilkinson.
Wednesday, Atachu's not playing.
Yep.
He's not on IR yet, but he's just not going to play. So it's just every day brings bad injury news for the Broncos.
Here's the maybe even worse news. That it is going to get worse. We're going into week four.
Yeah.
This is a physical sport. Guys are going to continue to go down just because they're playing NFL football.
That's right.
If the starting point that you and I had this as a losing football team as the starting point at 7-9, now you have $53 million of your payroll sitting on IR right now.
Whole lot of money.
Number one in the league. Number one in the NFL. And we haven't hit the quarter pole yet.
Nope.
I mean, this is nuts. This is nuts.
You know, it's nuts. The facts of the situation are when you have that many people on injured reserve and that many injuries, it makes it really, really difficult to win football games. Those are just the facts. It's not excuses for the Broncos for why they're losing, because I don't feel like they should have lost the Titans game. But they did.
Had a chance to win the Steelers game.
Yeah. But when you sustain the injuries that the Broncos have sustained, it's hard enough to win the NFL. It makes it even more difficult, obviously. And the Broncos are going to be, it's going to be a tough season. It's going to be a tough season for the Broncos. Kind of is what it is at this point. And hopefully for me, when I look at this season, we can find a couple gems. I'm talking about guys that we didn't know of. You know, maybe it's Bassey. He gets a lot of playing time. O.J. Moutier gets a lot of playing time.
Moutier.
That's what I said. And hopefully both those guys, you know, next year, all of a sudden we're looking at them as like, okay, these are some young, promising players going into year two. Man, they got so many reps last year. You know, we don't have to spend $15 million on a cornerback.
Right.
We got these two guys, and we feel good about them moving forward. That's what I'm looking forward to this year, and hopefully we can find a few of these. Maybe it's Bellamy all of a sudden. Yeah. He gets a looks like Austin Eckler, right? Something like that. I don't know. Maybe it's a right tackle. Probably not, because I can't even think of one that would step up and play right tackle, slotman.
Jake Rogers,
yeah, somebody like that. You know, that's probably not going to happen. I'm trying to think. Maybe look on the defensive line too. Our defensive ends, right? Find us a little, you know, hidden Williams, the Williams guy last
Sean
week.
Williams. That's who I was literally just thinking of. He got his hand up on a ball, a play here and there.
Yeah, he was around. He was active. At least I saw him.
Yeah,
you know, I don't remember seeing Jarrell Casey once in three games, really. And maybe it's Metelvin Ajim.
Oh. Somebody gosh, I didn't even think of him.
Somebody like that. I mean, was he third round pick from Arkansas? Was he third round?
No.
Fourth, fifth?
Yeah, he was a fifth, I think.
Defensive lineman from Arkansas.
Yeah.
So that we broke down his tape. This guy's an active guy, big body guy. Maybe he gets playing time.
Maybe. I didn't think he was going to be on the field at all this year, but, you know, circumstance. No, excuse me, Stoke. I just put my foot in my mouth. Metelvin Ajim was a third round pick.
Oh, okay.
He was one of the three. Yeah. Who was that? Cushenberry, Ojemudia, and Metelvin Ajim. Metelvin Ajim was the last of the three. It went Ojemudia, Cushenberry, Metelvin Ajim.
Yeah, okay.
Good call.
Yeah.
He switched positions. He was like a...
Yeah.
His last year, he switched positions.
Went from nose tackle to defensive tackle or something then to defensive end. Or put on a bunch of weight, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So a big body guy that can move pretty well for how big he is. Maybe he gets some playing time and we have something to look forward to next year. That's what it's all about right now. I think we can all say the Broncos aren't going to the playoffs and it's going to be a tough year. You got to deal with it. But hopefully some positives can come out of it. And the positives that I look at is some of these young guys getting playing experience. And hopefully we find some key guys, some hidden gems that we wouldn't have found if it wasn't because of these injuries. Like, oh, my gosh. You know, yeah, it stunk that Jarrell Casey got hurt. But, man, that playing time that Metelvin Ajim got last year was invaluable.
Yeah.
You know, we're saying that in 2021.
Yeah. That would be great. That would be best case scenario. If we could walk away with one or two of those guys.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Especially at the corner. I'm looking at these cornerbacks, you know, because obviously we got two rookies playing a lot. And hopefully that experience pays off for the Broncos in 2021.
That'd be great. And last thought here, just on the injuries, the Broncos still have enough talent that's healthy to go and beat the New York Jets tomorrow night.
We'll see. I'll give you my prediction tomorrow.
But Bradley Chubb and Shelby Harris, Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson, A.J. Johnson, Bryce Callahan, those guys are all still going to play tomorrow night. Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, Melvin Gordon, K.J. Hamler, those guys are all still going to play tomorrow night.
They are. And I have a feeling we might have our first disagreement on the Broncos game.
Really?
I just have a sneaky feeling that we might be disagreeing.
I can't wait. Can't wait for tomorrow.
We've agreed on every one of them, right?
We have. All three losses. Loss.
Yeah, that's what we predicted.
And that's what's
L. Okay. Yep. So I think we might disagree on this one. I just kind of...
Maybe so.
Feeler here from you, you know.
Maybe so.
I think we're on opposite ends.
Maybe so. Stokes, someone at this station was not a fan of your stance on the Broncos injuries.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of getting put on blast,
oh,
I think.
Perfect. I love it. Bring it.
Tell you who said what next. Stokes, someone at this station was not a fan of your stance on the Broncos injuries. But really quick, before I play you this piece of audio, I got to give a shout out to our buddies at Pat's Philly Cheesesteaks, who wrote me a little nice little note on our food delivery today.
I saw that.
Appreciate you guys.
How about that? Yeah.
He says, who's worse, the Eagles or the Broncos? The right answer gets you free cheesesteaks for the rest of 2020.
Wow.
I'm like, whoa, that's a big reward there. The Eagles stink and the Broncos stink. Man, Carson Wentz. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to get too distracted, but Carson Wentz, this is an 0-2-1 football team. A tie.
He's been super duper bad.
He has been horrific. Just horrific. He has twice as many interceptions right now than he does touchdowns.
I jumped off that bandwagon.
Yep. And sprained your ankle on the way down.
Yeah.
You were on that thing for a minute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a big believer in him. I don't know what's going on with him.
I couldn't believe their acceptance at the end of the football game to not try to be aggressive and win the game.
Yeah, that's a tough situation to be in. They were going to kick the field goal, then they got a guy false started on the field goal unit offensive line there, and now they're you're looking at a 60 something yard or whatever it was going to be, and or fourth and long. And you just look at the ramifications, like, goodness, if we do it and we don't get it, they're going to have the ball right around midfield, and now we're going to lose this thing possibly.
Right,
so,
right.
That was a tough one to be in if you're Doug Peterson.
But at 0-2, I think you need to be aggressive.
No, you're right. You're right. And we were in that situation here with Gary Kubiak and were you in town then with Gary Kubiak against, I think it was against the Chiefs.
No.
This was
2016, right?
Yeah. We were in that situation here, and I believe Gary tried a long field goal, missed it. Chiefs won.
Mike Kliss just referenced that game.
Did he really?
With the drive. Literally just, it was yesterday or the day before, because he said the Broncos' record since that game, because the wheels came off that season. He said the record since that game, I think, gosh, and I'm going to screw this up, but it's like the third or fourth worst in the NFL.
Wow.
They've been like a bottom, four teams since that game. Okay.
Give it to me. Who is it?
Who do you think it is?
Slareth.
His cohort, Mike Evans. This is a conversation from, is this this morning? This is yesterday morning.
Wrong, wrong, wrong. Couldn't disagree more.
I'm glad you said wrong. Go ahead, you go first.
Okay. Yes, the 49ers are a Super Bowl contender. And you know why they're a Super Bowl contender? Because they've drafted exceptionally well. They've built the kind of roster that is not only Super Bowl contending worthy, but when they get hit with injuries, they have the kind of depth to continue to go out and produce. Look, the Broncos 49ers dynamic is very interesting. 3 years ago in 2016, the 49ers were 2-14. Over a 3 year span, 2016, 17, and 18, the 49ers went 2-14, 6-10, 4-12.
Mm-hmm.
The Broncos during that same span, went 9-7, 5-11, and 6-10. Basically, starting from the same starting point, now you see where the 49ers are at, and now you see where the Broncos are at. It is a glaring, shine the spotlight on it, indictment of what hasn't been done around here the last several years when it comes to team building. And if anything, yes, I think you use the 49ers as an example of what should have been done and what hasn't been done and why accountability can't get thrown out the window just because the Broncos are getting hit with injuries right now.
Okay, see, he was reacting to my take, looking at the differences between the 49ers injuries and the Broncos injuries. And my whole point was, and you remember that, right? My whole point was these are two different situations, and it's a lot harder for the Broncos to deal with these injuries right now than the San Francisco 49ers, who have also had some key injuries. Obviously, a couple of their defensive line starters, Bosa and yep. Solomon Thomas, go down 2 weeks ago. They lose their quarterback to a high ankle sprain and lost a few receivers along the way also. Our situation is different because we don't have the depth that they have. That's basically what I was saying. And so it's going to be a lot harder for the Denver Broncos to overcome these types of injuries because of the lack of depth that we've had. Yes, the drafts have been bad up until hopefully the last couple years here. So
you guys are actually saying the same thing.
Right. So kinda. I don't really know what he's reacting to, with what I said, because that was kind of my point, was that the 49ers have better depth, and that's why they're more equipped to handle it.
And you also, on Monday, and I emphasized it for you yesterday and gave you credit, you were referencing the starting point from both teams. The starting week one point.
Yes.
That the Niners, because they've added great
that's
depth
right.
and drafted well, their starting point's a Super Bowl roster. So when you are decimated with injuries to those big names, you are still able to roll the team like the Giants. Whereas the Broncos starting point, you had them at 7-9 before any of these injuries happened.
Right.
And therefore, when you are decimated, you're, you know, not competitive. So,
right, exactly.
And honestly, it's like maybe they played a clip of audio that we didn't hear specifically, that maybe you were giving a bit of a pass to someone, I don't know, I can't quite remember if you said that you were going to give a little bit of a pass to either Vic or Pat, so maybe that's what they were reacting to, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I think you look at the situations, you have to take everything into consideration when you're evaluating Vic and the staff.
Yeah.
I think you have to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can't evaluate them like this football team is a healthy football team, can you?
No.
I
mean,
I was already giving them passes anyway for the most part. I said that before the season started.
Offensively more so.
Offensively, that's right. There was no passes for the defense. But offensively, yes, there was going to be some passes there. The COVID pass, right?
No offseason, new offense,
right.
All that stuff that we know to be
yes.
true.
Yes, and now, on top of that, you have the injuries. So you have to throw that into the equation when you're evaluating this coaching staff, and when you're evaluating, you know, the front office and everybody. It's just part of it.
This is your new reality.
That's right.
And I was trying to articulate this yesterday. To think that it's one thing or the other, like you're going to be on the extreme of either side, because I do think that there's voices of extremes on both sides that absolutely, positively, no passes given out. It's the NFL. No one gives a damn. No one's feeling sorry for you. Going to be held accountable regardless. And then the other side of the extreme just keeps on pointing out how banged up the Broncos are, how much money's on IR, and how is this team supposed to be competitive when everyone's so hurt? Well, they're both true. And
that's
to
right.
act like they're not both true isn't looking at it with the lens of the situation. Is Cortland Sutton important in this team? Is Drew Locke important in this team? Is Von Miller? Of course. Check. But is there guys who are out there, Bradley Chubb, Shelby Harris, Jarrell Casey, Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson, A.J. Johnson, Bryce Callahan, those guys all played this past week. They just didn't play well. So,
right.
Yeah, you're banged up, but there's also some signature characters out there that just aren't playing up to their potential or their expectation. So both things are simultaneously true. And you have to go about evaluating everything through just the reality of the situation for both the injured and non-injured guys.
That's right. You got to take everything into consideration when you are looking at the Broncos and their results and how they did and how you're evaluating the coaching staff and the players. You got to take it all into consideration. I think it's all fair and it's all facts.
We have War Room Wednesday.
Ooh,
presented
War Room Wednesday.
Brothers Barbecue. Now, typically,
they got the A team coming in today, don't they?
I was gonna say, typically these are great anyway.
Yeah,
would you sprinkle in a little Soakley and Zach?
Yeah.
All
must
right.
Listen.
All right, that's a little bit of spicy mustard on it.
So Brothers Barbecue.
We'll be munching down today.
I only ate half my sandwich because I'm gearing up for hot links and some that pulled pork.
It's like the day of a wedding. You kind of starve yourself.
Instead of a wedding?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, if you're going to a wedding, you make sure you don't eat so you can really, you know, pig out.
No.
No?
I do that like if I'm going to Jing or something, you know, or Dell's or Shanny's, you know, something like that. That's what I'll do at wedding.
What? Yeah. All right. We'll be there today.
303-713-1043.
None of those texts
Zach
are getting
ready. Check about whatever he's
put
talking
Stokely
about.
Put Stokely in check. Everyone knows I'm talking about wedding. But you. All right.
How many weddings? You act like you go to a wedding a week or something.
Dude, I've been to like 50 weddings. You starve yourself before and you go pig out. All right. I'm going to make a... that's not the segment we're going into. New context today. You see, you got me all flustered.
I know.
New context today sheds light on a massive organizational failure. All right? And I can promise you, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Fill you in next. So today, I personally have new context that sheds a light on a massive organizational failure. And I said going into break, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Because this is just...
I have no idea.
It's kind of random, but it's not. All right? It's kind of random, but it's not. I'm watching more than half of professional baseball teams play in the playoffs yesterday and today. It is a March Madness type of setup. It is the largest postseason that we have ever had in the history of Major League Baseball. And somehow, the Colorado Rockies are not a part of the more than half of Major League Baseball that is playing postseason ball. Stoke, I went back and looked. Only six other teams since the Rockies' very first season back in 1993, only six teams had worse winning percentages, percentages than the 2020 Rockies. They were 20 games under 500 a year ago. And their winning percentage got worse year over year. They actually were technically worse. If you extrapolated their .433 winning percentage over 162 games, the Rockies would have finished up 70-92. And to say goodbye here to not only the season, but our good friend, our final hit of the year, Patrick Saunders, joins us now on the Fireball Hotline. I knew it was bad. I've always had an appreciation for how bad it was. Been talking about how bad it was since, you know, the halfway point. But I think the full understanding of what the Rockies product was this year and the organizational failure from before even the first pitch was thrown between the GM and the star player, it truly washed over me today, reacting to the games this yesterday and getting caught up on what happened in game ones yesterday and seeing a March Madness style slate set up here today, Patrick.
Yeah, it's discouraging, no doubt. And I think what makes it harder for Rockies fans to stomach is the fact they came out of the gate so strong, right? 11-3.
Yeah.
And then for them to implode as much as they did. And the way they lost games, guys, was, I think that's what was so disheartening. They would maybe get one facet that would, you know, play well, perform well. They get an excellent start from one of their guys in the rotation, and the bullpen would blow it, or they'd get no run support at all. And then on those games where they would get the offense finally would come alive, the starting pitching wasn't there, or the bullpen would blow it again. And if you look at the statistics, and I did a breakdown the other day on this, and I understand it's a truncated 60-game season, but a lot of categories, the Rockies put up some of the worst franchise numbers in history.
Yep.
We're talking worst on-base percentage in team history. We're talking about some of the worst OPS in team history. It's, you know, the home runs were not good. About the only good thing you can say about this past season, despite a few, you know, individual really nice performances, was the core three, the starting rotation, I think, set themselves up for a pretty good future. But beyond that, it was pretty much a disaster.
Yeah, Patrick, I'm looking at this team and I'm trying to find some of the bright spots in the 60-game season. I look at Tapia, leading off and how he kind of solidified that role. He had a really, really good season. Batted .321 to lead the Rockies. And Fuentes and what he was able to do once he joined the club and got called up. But then also, like you said, is those three starting pitchers that I say, you know what? If those guys can continue to build off what we saw this year, and you got three guys like that, that can pitch for you consistently and do it well, night in and night out, to have three of those guys, plus, Tapia, Fuentes, and hopefully we can have some bounce back years from some of these other guys. Maybe it's not as bleak as it turned out in 2020.
Well, I think that's fair. I think, and I'm glad you brought up Tapia and Josh Fuentes, because you're right. Those guys both had terrific seasons. And for Tapia, really was a breakout year. And that you're exactly right about him. I think what's discouraging to some of the players I've talked to is the fact that you look at those core starters, and let's face it, you never know, particularly pitching at Coors Field and at altitude, how long they're going to be able to maintain the prime of their professional careers. But it's the organization's not giving them what they need to build off that, right? So if you've got this core in place, starting pitching, which is always so desperately needed here, yet you don't have the players in the bullpen to back it up.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to happen? I think that's what's most discouraging. And let's face it, if you guys recall, it was October 1st of last year where we had a sit down, a press event with the big three, Breidich, Monfort, and Bud Black. And the common theme from the three of them was, we think the core is in place for the whole team. Don't expect us to do much, which they didn't. And you know what? Guys performed their capabilities. Everything's golden. Well, it turned out to be a huge miscalculation. The offense has been terrible. The bullpen's a disaster. And now there's more questions than answers about this team. And you got to understand exactly why Nolan Arenado, whether you are on his side or not, for going public with his disenchantment, Nolan was exactly right. This team did not improve enough to make this team a contender. And unfortunately for Nolan, he got hurt and he didn't play well. So now what he said kind of rings a little bit hollow, but he was right on the money.
And last one for me, Patrick, before we let you go here. We've speculated about it for almost a year now. Does Nolan Arenado play another game for the Rockies?
I got to say, given the financial landscape of things, I think he does. I don't think he wants to be here. It's my opinion. But I'm not sure if there's any way out because he's owed $35 million next year. I'm not sure what team is going to trade to pick up that contract. And then does Nolan opt out after 2021, given the chance of him getting that lucrative a contract now with the financial landscape in sports and baseball? I don't know, guys.
And the other question I asked Patrick is, if he doesn't want to be here, and this is real, I'm just being real, I love Nolan, but if he doesn't want to be here, is that negative force when you're trying to turn things around, subtracting more than it's adding?
I guess it depends on how he plays. I think Nolan's a good enough player. I think he'll bounce back. I think he's professional enough that what he brings to the diamond every day will override any hard feelings that he has with the front office or ownership. I've talked to a number of players, and if they're being honest with me, I don't think there is a resentment factor against Nolan in that clubhouse. I have not heard it. I have not seen it. So I don't think that necessarily drags down the franchise. I think Nolan's, I don't think it's going to let him, it's going to affect his play in the long run.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll be that. Patrick, we appreciate you joining us all season long. The Rockies finished 26 and 34. They were outscored by 78 runs in 60 games. That's the third worst run differential in all of Major League Baseball. It was really unfortunate, way below expectations at the start, but certainly after 11-3. And it just is what it is. We'll have to hang tight and wait until things turn around, hopefully, next season, Patrick.
Yeah, and we'll see, guys. We'll see if the offseason brings any major changes or not. At this point, I think it's really, really unclear.
All right, Patrick, thank you so much. This is a third straight year doing this
thanks, Patrick.
With our show. We really appreciate you, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes. Yeah, and here's what I was going to say. I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think the Rockies are in big trouble, and there's no end in sight. I think that you're looking up at the Dodgers, Padres, and now the Giants in your own division. I think that this team is going nowhere fast. You're now seeing it in consecutive seasons, just a dumpster fire. Somehow it got worse, you know, being 20 games under. Somehow it got worse. And yeah. I'm just really discouraged because I love going to those games and rooting for the Rockies and watching them on a nightly basis and listening to Drew Goodman every night. And those guys did a great job second half of the year. Reached out to Drew yesterday and said that. In some of these games that were just like nightmares.
Yeah, that's tough to do.
It really
you know,
is.
When you go on that type of streak, especially after the start they had and the players aren't performing and they're not hitting consistently and, you know, scoring 1-2 runs a game. It's tough, tough. No, Zach, you're right. Look, you look at this division, the Dodgers and the Padres. And then, you know, you got the Rockies and Giants and Diamondbacks sitting there, you know, fighting for scraps now. It's just the way it is. So things aren't getting any easier for the Rockies moving forward. That's for sure.
How do you get outscored by 78 runs in 60 games?
You can't hit the baseball. That's why. You can't score runs.
Yeah.
They couldn't score.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
It's part of it. It's like in football, you know. Offensively, Broncos can't score. They're going to have a hard time winning.
The Broncos need a spark.
Yeah,
that's what the Broncos need. They need a spark. And the good news is, it may be coming tomorrow night. I'll bounce it off you next. Going in the break, I said the Broncos need a spark. And it may be coming tomorrow night. And immediately someone on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. It said the Broncos need a savior, not a spark, LOL.
They need something.
Yeah, they need something.
A whole lot of something.
I don't think a savior's walking through that door, but they could use a spark and, you know, keep their season alive before Drew Lock comes back. You know how you Stoke oftentimes you'll be breaking down a football game at the end, you'll say extend the game. You know, there was an opportunity to extend the game. Well, a win tomorrow night in New York is an opportunity to extend a season. I know it sounds crazy because it's just week four, but that's where we're at.
Yep.
And the spark I'm talking about is Philip Lindsay returning to the field from a turf toe. Now he is questionable. He's been limited in practice, but this has been the target for him to come back. The hopeful target. What do you think that Philip Lindsay, if he came back tomorrow night, could that be a shot in the arm that this offense needs?
Well, hopefully. I mean, obviously, Philip Lindsay's a really good football player. He's an explosive football player. Anytime he touches the football, he has a chance to go the distance with it. We've seen it. So if you can get that type of player back on your offense, that's only going to help the offense out. That's only going to help Brett Rippon out, your quarterback. Easy pass. Swing it out there to Philip Lindsay.
Yep.
Check down to Philip Lindsay, and he can take it the distance. Hand it to Philip Lindsay. So the more explosive players that the Broncos will have on the football field, obviously, they're going to be better off. And a guy like Philip Lindsay, if he can return, it's only going to help this offense. And the offense needs help. They need more explosiveness. They need more points. I mean, you're already starting. You're on your third quarterback of the year, a guy that's an undrafted guy. A guy that wasn't supposed to play this year is going to be making his first start. He needs help. And a guy like Philip Lindsay certainly could help him. Help him a lot.
Who's Melvin Gordon been through three contests?
He's been, I'd say, I don't want to. He's been average to good. I mean, you know, he hasn't been bad. Had the one fumble, but really hasn't done a whole lot. He's had a couple nice runs. I say average. I don't want to be overly critical of him, but I think that's fair. He hasn't been great.
No, he hasn't been great. He's averaging about 58 yards a game. He's averaging 4 yards a carry.
Okay.
Now, he does have that receiving touchdown from Driscoll.
That was a nice catch.
Yep. He did have a rushing touchdown in week one.
But just real quick, other than that touchdown that he caught, he hasn't done anything in the passing game.
No. No. Nope. He has 9 total receptions for 34 yards. So that's just, just under 4 yards per reception. That's not great. His longest run, and this is the thing, when you think of Melvin Gordon, there's opportunities for big plays. He makes guys miss. He's a tackle breaker.
Yeah.
He hasn't really shown that.
No.
He hasn't shown that. He had his longest rush of the season is 16 yards. That's it. And so when I think of big plays in the running game, typically those are defined by 15 yards or more on the ground, 20 yards or more in the air. He's got one big run. And you can say, it's 1 yard over the qualification of a big run.
Right. Hoping for a little bit more. Hoping for more in the passing game. But I think, when you pay a guy what John Elway paid Melvin Gordon, he was hoping for a little bit more from Melvin Gordon so far. Still early.
Yep, still early.
Right? I mean, we got to also look at Melvin Gordon in the same context that we look at the rest of these offensive players.
Sure.
When it comes to, getting up to speed with this offense, and obviously he came from, did you just seriously do that?
Dude, come on, man.
Come on, man.
How many times you got to see it to not be surprised by it?
I mean, I hadn't seen it in about a month or two. I mean, what are you drinking, first of all?
Emergency.
Okay, yeah, and you put your pen, the bottom half of the pen, and you stir the powder into your liquid, and then you proceed to flick it, the rest of it off on the ground, and then you lick the rest off the pen. was that an accurate description there?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, when you put the powder in, it needs a little extra after you've let it sit for a minute because it just clumps up a little bit. So just to break it all up. And
do it with your finger.
Get it all in there.
I think your finger would be better than the back end of the pen. I'm just saying.
Probably.
And then the finishing touch of putting that back end of the pen in your mouth.
Yeah. I took this pen off Scott Duff's desk on the way in.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even my pen. And guess what? That's where I'll leave it after I go.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Terrible. With a capital T.
Thank you, Coach McMahon.
Hey, did Tom McMahon give more zingers? I think he did.
Yes.
I think he did because he said he was asked about the game, about how bad special teams were. Last week, terrible with a capital T. This week, he said it was T-O-M. It's on Tom.
Oh.
He went third person.
Did he
his name
really?
Out.
No,
I think
he
so.
Didn't.
I think
We've
so.
We've got to get that, Steven.
I think
and
so.
And make sure you save it.
I think that was said. I can't confirm because I didn't hear it from myself, but I might have seen that transcribed on the old Twitter machine.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yep.
I love it.
We'll do some digging.
That's awesome.
This is the hard-hitting research you get between noon and 3 here.
So we do.
Did Tom McMahon go through? Oh, my gosh. All right, so we haven't heard this. This is from this week reacting to this past week's special teams performance.
Well, I'm not going to go through the protection part. What it comes down to is I got to do a better job. There's 3 letters when it comes to the fault there. It's T-O-M. We got to be ready for that on game day. And it comes down to me, Mace.
Oh, love it.
Dude.
Love it.
Because it comes down to 3 letters. T-O-M. Spelled his own name.
Too good.
The
Too
legend
good.
Grows.
Yes.
The legend
it
grows.
It certainly does. But I look at, Philip Lindsay and hopefully his, what he could provide for this offense. And certainly it would be a boost. And I'm still curious to see how the dynamics play out. Right?
Melvin Gordon can't be stress-free anymore.
Right. I don't know. I'm not really expecting Philip Lindsay to play.
Okay. Maybe the Patriots game, week 5.
Look, I don't know. I mean, he could play, but you're playing on that turf that the 49ers complained about. It's not grass, and you got turf toe. playing on bad turf that a lot of guys don't like for whatever reason. And it just seems like you might as well pump the brakes and make sure that thing is good and get ready for the following week where you got more time to, you know, let the thing heal up a little bit.
That'd be great if we can get Drew Locke and Philip Lindsay back in the same week. Patriots, that'd be ideal. Might take an extra week for Drew.
Drew's going to be back by the Patriots.
It might take an extra week.
Yeah. I'd say a week or two. I know like timetables have been talked about with Drew, like, oh, he's maybe ahead of schedule. But I just think a throwing shoulder, cautious approach, I wouldn't expect to see him back for the Patriots. But hopefully Philip Lindsay, we'll see if he plays tomorrow, but I'm really not expecting it because of the type of injury he had and that turf that they're playing on in New York. So,
all right.
But we'll see.
It's been weird having to share James Palmer with some of the other shows on this station. He goes on with Nick and Cecil, hangs out on the drive.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.